Από πού ερχόσασταν και πού πηγαίνατε?
Από Λονδίνο ήμουν για Αθήνα.
Τέλος, καλό, όλα καλά.
Thank you for inviting me, by the way.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for organizing this.
Well, the least I could do.
Yeah, it was surreal because 2 days ago now, I was in Newcastle.
Newcastle?
Yeah, near the Scottish border.
I know.
2 days work in Newcastle. And then got the train down to London. And then yesterday morning flew to Italy. And from Italy came here.
That's crazy.
That's what I've done.
Life in the air.
Yeah, but then for months I wasn't doing that. Anyway, right, we're going to start. Welcome to the fourth series of Icarus Falls. And we're starting in a location that I promised we would try to go to. Because although this podcast series is about Icarus, I also wanted it to be about some of the areas attached to Icarus. And one of those places is Albania. And Tirana is a place that I've been visiting for about 8 years now. And that all began when I made a documentary in Albania around 2017. And we're here today with a friend I met during that adventure. And his name is Brian Gega. I hope I've said your name right.
Yes. So first, thank you for the invitation. So basically, we met in a TV show. So you came to promote the documentary, the Andy documentary that you made for Nikos Gelia. And I was there as an interpreter, because I work as an interpreter. And we met, we had the discussion. So you spoke Greek and English. I translated it in Albanian. And then we had this whole conversation in Greek, in Albanian, in English, which was amazing because it was also related with the identity, which was the topic of the documentary. You know, I watched the documentary even before I met you, so I watched it in Antenna back then. And I remember that I identified myself with Nikos because more or less, even though we are different people, different stories, different backgrounds, we still have the same thing. So when I was in Greece, I was always the Albanian. So when you're an Albanian, you're in Greece, you are basically conceive at least as a person, okay, we are neighbors, this and that, but you're hardly perceived as a person who can become a lawyer, who can become a doctor, who can become a star. So you're perceived something that will become a cook or somebody who will do the dishes. So basically jobs that the Greek people do not want to do most of the time, so, or just a construction worker. But I believe this is the same not only for Albanians working in Greece, but also for immigrants in general going to other countries. Our origin and who we are has an impact on the way how we are perceived by the other people.
Let's go back to the start. And
sure.
By now we know you're an interpreter.
Yes.
I'd love you to tell us a little bit about your story,
mm-hmm.
where you were born, where you were from, a little bit about your family,
mm-hmm.
and as you briefly mentioned, your relationship with Greece.
So I was born in 1995, and when I was 3 years old, my father immigrated in Greece. And back then he went alone and I stayed with my mother in Albania, in Elbasan, where I was born. So my father stayed alone for 2 years. However, a time came that I had to go there. And so we went to Greece. So when I went in Greece, I only knew 2 words in Greek. Yes and no. Ne ke ochi. And these were the only words I knew in my first grade. However, with the passing of time, I caught up very quickly the Greek languages and I did well in schools. I made many friends, so things were good. However, still, I felt a little bit like not an outsider, not an alien, but I didn't have the community, let's say. So I did great in schools. However, I didn't spend much time with friends after school. So it was just me and my parents. I spent time in school. Me and my parents, that was all. So I didn't have this social life.
Not even the Albanian community in Athens.
Not even the Albanian community. And to be honest, I had better relations with Greek people rather than Albanians.
Okay.
I don't know why this was what happened. So apart from being in Albania, I also had a problem with the self-esteem. I had a very poor self-esteem because I was obese, not just overweight. So people used to make fun of me of my weight. I was also an immigrant. So I had all these issues. And then it was like a competition about astrophysics. So we had to make a project something. I was like, okay, I'm going to make a rap song about astrophysics. So I made a rap song about astrophysics, and we did great, and we were qualified to the national championship. So we finished third on the national level in Greece. And I remember my song back then was called Big Bang Yo. And I made fun of how the Big Bang was created, and I had like rap lyrics, and I performed in front of my classmates. And this helped me with boosted my self-confidence, and this helped me make friends. So I finished gymnasio there, and then it was the financial crisis of 2009. So I was in front of my family was in front of the dilemma that what are we going to do? Are we going to stay here in Greece, spend the money that we have saved because both of them were unemployed or they had very few days, so we can barely make ends meet? Or are we going back to Albania where we have our own house, fewer expenses, and also it would be easier for me to restart a new life because if I stayed in Greece, I had to attend Lykio as well, higher education, and it would be more difficult for me to go back then and to pursue higher education here in Albania.
Okay, so it was about timings too.
It was about timing, yes. So 2009 was a crisis, so what are we going to do for a best future for our child? So we went back, and I remember the first day in high school, I said to myself, what the hell am I doing here? Because I felt that still I didn't belong there. So the students were completely different. I was used to order, to staying in line in queues before entering the school, to attending the prayer and the national anthem. We had the national anthem, but there was not really a line, and we had no prayers, of course. And then I went in the classroom. It was big classes with 30-plus students, whereas in Greece, we were maximum 22, 24. And so I struggled with Albanian language because it was very poor. I struggled with classes, struggled with making friends. And I remember back then I only had one friend who lived very far away from me. So during the summer, I rarely had any friends to spend time with. Anyway, there was again another competition. This time it was about the English language, and it was organized by the British Embassy because it was the Summer Olympics in London. I don't remember the year. 2016, I think. 2012, right, sorry. It was the Summer Olympics 2012, so I wrote an essay and I wrote another rap song. I don't remember the rap song. So we competed and I won two of the competition on the local level, one for best essay, even though my handwriting is terrible, and one other for the best performance with my song. So that, again, gave me self-confidence. So whenever I've had problems, whenever I felt like depressed, I always found a safe place in creativity, in a way of expressing myself, in a way of relieving myself from all these negativity, negative emotions. And then you're ready to face life again.
A lot of people don't have much basic knowledge on the recent history of Albania. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we had a dictator called Hoxha who was in power for around 40 years.
Yes.
And Albania had its own version of communism.
We had a harsher version of communism than that of Yugoslavia because in Albania, you couldn't leave the country. And if you tried to flee your country, you were basically shot because that was what the law said. And even if people wanted to come in the country, they had to obey some rules. And funny thing here, for example, if you wanted to come in Albania and you were a foreigner, you have to have a good haircut, so no long hair were allowed for men, no beard was allowed for men. So Albania was following the Marxist doctrine. However, according to the Albanian laws, even Marxist himself wouldn't be allowed to enter Albania because of his hair and his beard. So back then, people were assigned a school by the government of the time, so you wanted to go to higher education. However, if you had a bad biography, meaning that your parents or grandparents or an uncle of yours did something against the regime, then you weren't allowed to pursue higher education. You were just given a vacancy or you were sent to a factory to work there. And there is this theory that the buildings, of the Soviet buildings that we have in Albania and other countries, they are grey just because they want to kill the hope of people. And back then, you just had to follow the system. Everybody was sent to work, so there was supposed to be no unemployment. Even if there was no vacancy, you would have to go somewhere. You couldn't just sit. You always had to work. And you were given very little money. However, when you got married, you were given an apartment. You pay very little rent, however, you had a place to go. In fact, there are some people who are nostalgic of the communism regime, however paradoxically this might seem to some people. And there are these people who say that back then, at least we had work to do. We were paid very little, however, we were equal. We weren't afraid of what was happening because we also didn't have this negative phenomena such as drugs. Because we were separated from the West and all the other countries. We were just our own country, Albania, a very isolated country. And many people compare today's North Korea with Albania of the time. So communism fell during the 90s, and the main documents proving that CIA wanted to overthrow Hoxha, however, they failed several times. And then it was his successor who was a little bit more liberal, however, just people were fed up. I've been told stories about people who just used their cans, whatever they could find, just to create antennas so they could watch Italian TV stations, Greek TV stations if they were near the Greek borders, or Yugoslavian TV stations, or if you just get a little bit of music. Or they grew longer hair, just a way of liberating yourself.
Rebelling.
Rebelling, yes, exactly, that's the right word. So it was during the 90s, it was a student movement. So basically students said, okay, that's enough. So they went to the streets and they overthrew the statue of Hoxha that was placed there, and this marked the wind of change. However, still it was a very troublesome period. In 1997, Albania had a big crisis because of some pyramid schemes, and many people lost great amounts of money. However, there were many depots with weapons, so people, they were frustrated, they lost all their savings, the savings of their whole life. So what they did, they went to the armed depots, they got some weapons, AK-47, hand grenades, and they started people killing themselves, there was anarchy. And my parents tell me that I had a problem, that I almost broke my hand. And it was during the night, so it was very hard for them to take me to the hospital because it was a curfew and it was very, very dangerous. That was 1997, and then 1999, it was the crisis with the embassies. So people stormed to the embassies asking for asylum. And there were many, many people who left the country. They said, okay, we want asylum, we cannot live here anymore.
And I think that's why Greece and Italy were quite affected by it, because whether it was clambering onto boats or breaking through the borders into Greece,
they were neighboring countries, so want it or not, they would receive these immigrants.
Yeah.
The issue is that the Albanian immigrants were not always properly received. For example, I'm going to show you a picture later on. So there was a boat called Vlora. It was full with people, crowded with people. It went to Italy. Then the people who arrived in Italy, they were sent in stadiums and they were thrown bread and they were just given water like they were animals. Because that was the initial way of proceeding, because there were too many immigrants. The issue is that from one side you have the locals who want their own economy, they want land, they want their own jobs, they want their own profits. On the other side you have other people who happened to be born in another land and they are asking for a better future. So how do you address this issue? How do you address the inequality? Should you keep everything for yourself and tell the other person to stay in your own land, do not come here? Should you receive these other people and exploit them, do and make them do the work that you do not want to do? What should you do in such situations? So it's very complex, this immigration issue.
I remember one of your jobs is to teach dentistry students English. Yes. The idea is that if you study certain subjects that certain countries in the EU are missing key workers from, you can get a visa eventually and go and move to Germany or wherever you really want in Europe based on your skill set.
That's true. So most of my friends, they've left Albania. So I have friends who live in Norway, Italy, the US, Germany, Switzerland, the UK. So they are seeking a better future. However, if during the 90s people just left the country, they went there illegally trying to find a work and then they would fix the documents, now people do not want to emigrate in this way. They are seeking more of a formal way of emigrating. So they say, okay, I'm going to pursue higher education and I'm going to become a skilled worker and I'm going to go there legally. Or I'm just going to work as a waiter in Germany. I can apply legally and I can go and work there. The problem that I have here is that if everybody leaves, then who is going to take care of the country? Because we have huge brain drain. There are many, many doctors who have left the country, many engineers who have left the country. And you need to put things in balance. So from one side, you have your own homeland, and from the other side, you have your own personally family life. So should you, in a way, sacrifice your own life for your homeland, for your country, so you can make it and improve your country? Or should you ask for what's best for you? Or should you go there, have a career, and then maybe one day come back and invest in your country as the immigrants of the 90s did?
That's the point of view that I was going to go with.
Okay.
That maybe you can leave when you're young, put a number of years into a profession, and then come back to your homeland with that experience, potentially with new ideas, and contribute.
So there are two sides of this medal. So from one side, we have the people who did that. And you can see it, for example, in the restaurants in Albania. Many of them, they are owned by people who used to work in Italy, in Greece. So they brought their experience here, they invested, and now they are very successful. On the other hand, there are also people who came here with hope. They said, okay, we have made some money, we can invest here. Yet they got disappointed. They said that was a terrible disappointment. We should rather stay where we were than we came here. So still, some people are disappointed when coming here because things are not that well as they anticipated.
Beyond the politics, beyond its communist past, let's talk about this incredible city that we're in. And before doing this interview tonight, we went on bit of a tour around the city. You showed me a few places, and honestly, I'm shocked at the level of development that's happening.
I told you the story about the Tirana International Hotel that during communism was the tallest building, and that's why it was called the building with the 15 floors. That was the highest. And now you have buildings that are over 30 floors, and there are buildings that are going to be built that are going to be over 50 floors. So 50-story buildings that are going to be built very near one another and near the center. However, in the center, there are some historic landmarks that have been there for 100 years or even more. And when you build these huge buildings that might look amazing from the architectural point of view, however, on the other side, they are ruining the impact that this smaller historic building had in the past. So how do you balance that? Can't you just build this skyscraper elsewhere so you do not ruin it, so you can preserve a bit more of these landmarks? And just my issue.
I agree. But I would say the spirit of Tirana will be preserved because the spirit of the city is really linked to its people. And it was so nice walking around the city tonight and still seeing the same smiling faces and getting our meatballs from a local vendor. And the spirit of Tirana is still there. I'm very happy to say.
What has changed a little bit, maybe? So sometimes during the summer, if you walk down the center of Tirana, you will hear more English being spoken rather than Albanian. And this shows the development of tourism from one side, and also it shows our direction where we're heading to. So tourism is a big thing. We are investing more and more in that. However, simply we need to be a little bit more careful.
You told me 10 million tourists
10 came. Million tourists visited Albania last year, and this year they still say that there's an increase of 20-30%, I think. I'm not sure about that. It could be even more. But I mean, a few weeks ago I was in Portugal. And I visited Porto, I visited Guimarães, Braga, and Aveiro. Porto was great. However, I really loved the fact that I was in Guimarães, a very small town with very few tourists. And I heard Portuguese. I didn't listen to English. I didn't listen to other languages. So sometimes you want to get the spirit of the locals. And that's what's missing day by day with having so many tourists. I remember a few months ago I was asked to prepare a translation of an interview that was made with the founder of Lonely Planet. And he was speaking about Albania, and he was asked to provide advice about Albania. And his advice was like, Albania needs to protect its spirits and not head only towards development, because in the end they will lose, the country will lose its spirit. So it's great that we have development. Nobody's against development. However, still, the city needs to have a soul. I believe that we need to be careful with the development in general, because there are many countries that have made development mistakes, and you cannot go back from the mistakes. This was the advice given by the founder of Lonely Planet, and I believe it's a very sound advice.
Yeah, but there are parts of the city that will be preserved, right?
Hopefully.
Bloku, for example, the hipster quarter, which used to be Hodges' old governmental office.
That's a very interesting story. So, however, even in Bloku there is development.
It was the hipster district even 7 years ago when I started coming.
I'm not sure whether I could call it hipster. However, it has its own vibe and it's very lively.
So do you remember that night my mother came and we took her to Radio Bar?
Yes.
And Radio Bar's got a lot of old artifacts from the communist era.
First of all, a few years ago, I'm not sure whether it's true even today, Albania was the number one country when it comes to coffee shops per capita. Because we love to drink coffee and spend time, a lot of time in cafeterias and coffee shops. And because there are so many, there is competition. So everybody wants to be unique. So you can find coffee shops or bars that they have these old artifacts from communism time, which are very, very interesting and fascinating. Back in communism, ordinary people were not allowed to enter into Bloku, because Bloku were only for the people who were related to the party, who were affiliated to the party. So Enver Hoxha, the dictator, lived here. Ramiz Alia lived there. So many, many people, high-level officials, lived there, people who work for the government. And now it's a place full of life. So you see restaurants, you see bars, you see cafes, you see everything. So it's a very, very interesting place.
Are there any other places you would encourage people to visit in Tirana in order to learn about that communist period?
So there are the Bunkards, so Bunkard 1 and Bunkard 2. And one is in the very center of Tirana. The other one is in the suburbs. Short story, Bunkards are basically bunkers that were built during the time. So one is near the Ministry of Interior. So if in case there was a war, this was a nuclear shelter. So the high officials would go there. And there are rumors that Bunkard 1 is connected with Bunkard 2, even though they are very far away from one another, several kilometers. And there you could see the rooms, how they were built, and also you have an interrogation room, which was very, very interesting. Back then, Albania was at continuous alert. The Yugoslavia is going to attack us. The Greek is going to attack us. West is going to attack us. Everybody is going to attack us. So back then, everybody did the drills. All people knew how to shoot with AK-47. It was an ordinary thing to do, and how to protect yourself. And so we invested so much money in building these bunkers just in case. A few months ago, for example, I was in Kukos. And the whole city of Kukos has many tunnels that are interconnected with one another, because Kukos is located very close to Kosovo, which was part of the Yugoslavia of the time. So there's a whole tunnel system. And every building, apart from having a tunnel, they also have these tunnels that are connected with one another. Some of the bunkers can withstand nuclear disasters, like the ones that have turned to the museums, like Bunker 1 and Bunker 2. Some other just simple bunkers.
And what are they all used for now?
Some they've just been left there to rot in a way, even though they're made from concrete. I've heard that one of them has turned into a tattoo studio. There are others that have turned into coffee shops or bars. And in Kukos, where there's this big network of tunnels, they want to invest to turn it like into a museum or into something. However, still they're looking at the options because it's very complex and it needs quite an investment.
And there are other buildings that I can see have been renovated over the past few years. One of them is the famous pyramid building.
Yes.
Which I remember because we used to slide down it.
So the story of the pyramid of Tirana is that it was built by the daughter of the dictator of the time. It was built as a mausoleum for the dictator, so he would be placed there, so we could remember. And there was a big, huge statue of Enver Hoxha there. Then it was the change of the regime. Of course, it wouldn't be a mausoleum of the dictator for as long as we hated the dictator. So then it was used for different purposes. I remember it was used as a radio and partially a TV station, who used to operate there. And however, it wasn't in proper shape. And people used to climb, children mostly used to climb there and slide down the pyramid, even though it was very dangerous. I have fallen once.
But it's a rite of passage. It used to be a rite of passage when you came to Tirana for the first time that you would slide down this pyramid.
Yes, many people did it. Then they say that it's illegal, but people still did it. And so the government said, okay, we have this building that is in the center, in the heart of the capital. And we are living in such a situation, it's very poor. So they invested, and together with the Albanian American Development Fund, they reconstructed the pyramid and they've made it into a hub for computers, computer sciences, engineering, artificial intelligence. So students, high school students, elementary students can go there and pursue courses to get to know about these degrees. How also there are many cafeterias and restaurants that have been opened.
Of course.
Of course, as it happens. And also you can climb safely because now you have stairs.
Let me understand. Rent prices, property prices, land prices, cost of living generally.
Yes.
It's all gone up, right?
It has skyrocketed. So it is very expensive now. So if you are a young person and you want to buy property now, then you are very hesitant in doing so because you see all this price and you say, this cannot be true. A square meter in the center of Tirana could go over 5,000 euros, whereas the average salary, it is, I think, 800 euros gross. And you say, okay, then I'm going to go to the suburb. But even the prices of the property in the suburbs have increased. So there are still people, including me, who are skeptical. They're saying, okay, should I buy property now or is it going to be a bubble? And then you're going to lose money, or should I wait a bit more? There are still people who are saying that, no, you shouldn't wait more because the prices are going to go up higher and higher and higher. The people who say, okay, but these are not normal prices, then you should stop. So it's very complex.
Do you hope one day that you might leave the city? I know you're here largely for work reasons now, but would you imagine a life for yourself in the countryside?
To be honest, I don't know, because I've always been raised as a city boy. So I was raised in Athens with a lot of hustle and bustle. Then I've spent most of my adult life now in Tirana. I don't know whether I would live in the countryside. It seems nice. I don't know whether... I'm afraid I could be bored. I want to be near people sometime because I love people. And you see, you know, there are the small things that happen in life that make you think. And I love humanity and I love being near people. And sometimes in the countryside, okay, I have this wilderness, you have this nature, but I also want to have this human approach. I want to have someone to talk to. I want someone to listen to.
You're 30 years old now.
That's 29. I'm not 30 yet.
Excuse me.
29 and 29 and 6 months.
You're 29 years old now. And I just think it's amazing at a point where Albania wasn't really able to open its doors or give young people the opportunity to easily travel abroad, that you managed somehow to bring the world to you.
That's a very interesting way of putting it. My career, the work that I do, is one of the things that make me the happiest. So I really love what I'm doing. I really love the fact that I'm able to meet on a daily basis different people. So it can be high-level diplomats, however, they can be ordinary people. It can be farmers, it can be firefighters, it can be police officers, it can be ministers. One day I'm interpreting in a conference about dentistry, the next day it is about an FAO meeting about parliamentarians in agriculture and the role in the position of agriculture in Europe and Central Asia. And the next day it is about turtles. So I like the fact that I'm also learning new things.
What do your parents think about your journey so far?
They're very proud of me. I remember when I initially started working television, I was very shy and embarrassed, and I was afraid that I would let them down. So I never told them about the interview, only after the interview was over, because I didn't want them to listen to the interview live. However, if the interview went okay, then I would call them, look, the interview went okay, you can watch it the next day, because I was in an interview. However, now things are completely different. I have more self-confidence. I know my skill, my potential, and not to be big-headed with that. You know, part of it's also for them, because I also want to make it proud, because, okay, let me put it this way. When I was in Greece, my father used to tell me that their work was to provide all the things I needed so I could have a better life. So they worked a lot. My father worked in construction. He woke up at 5 a.m. in the morning. He came out 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the evening. My mother used to work in the restaurant at night. So she came at home at 3 o'clock. She slept a little bit. She woke up in the morning. She made food, breakfast for my father. She made me ready. Then she helped me go to school. Then she came home, she did the chores, then she got things ready for her work in the evening. So they worked a lot, they sacrificed a lot, and I want to pay them back. And I've always felt it as a duty of mine to excel in school or to excel in career and to do the best to make them proud.
And there's a huge respect for what your parents did for you.
Yes, there's no way of thanking them for what they did.
And I think ultimately, looking back now, they did make the right choice to come back here.
Yes, looking back, I think they made the right choice, at least for me, for my career.
Well, Brianne, this has been the best start to the new series of Icarus Falls.
Thanks, buddy. So I'd like to thank you for this interview. It's very interesting because even though we've not met many times, I really do consider you a good friend of mine. So many times you texted me about this interview. However, the funny thing is that for the past few weeks before you texted me, I was thinking of texting you like, hey, how are you? Because we haven't spoken in ages. And please do come more often here in Tirana. You're always more than welcome. It's always a pleasure spending time with you and also considering you a good friend of mine.